This is Marketing Trends, your number one source for exclusive interviews with chief marketing officers and executive marketing leaders in the Fortune 1000 and beyond. This is Jeremy Bergeron, and I interview, collaborate, and partner with world-class CMOs and marketing leaders across industries.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Marketing Trends. I woke up today and I'm like, okay, who do I get to chat with today? Okay, another epic marketing executive. Let me tell you folks a little bit about Johan Reed. So Johan Reed has over 20 years of global marketing experience. He's led growth and transformation for some epic brands we'll talk about today. Regarded as one of today's most innovative marketing minds, he has disrupted industries, spearheaded initiatives that really redefine marketing excellence. This person has a track record of triple-digit growth that has been fueled by a gift for energizing teams. Incredibly relevant marketing executive in Johan. We're going to cover a lot today, as much as we can. And Johan has expertise across a lot of disciplines and segments and channels. And so please join me in welcoming an exceptional leader in Johan Reed, who reminds us all of marketing's unlimited possibilities. Johan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. That is an epic introduction.
You are so welcome. And honestly, I mean, one of the first things I do is when I find out who we're having on the show, I'm like, I want to go back to the beginning. And how did this person get to where they are? And you have such deep experience, and your career could have done some really interesting things. And here you now sit at the chief experience officer role, which is a really interesting role. So I want to double click right into that. What does it mean to be the chief experience officer at Emburse?
It's a new role. And at Emburse, the way that we've defined it is I lead both marketing and customer success. But if you kind of abstract that up a level, I'm really here to make sure that we deliver the brand experience that we promise.
What are some of the data and the metrics that you're looking at in terms? So maybe take us into the beginning of, like, you're looking at Emburse, you're evaluating it, you've accepted the opportunity there. What are some of the metrics you're paying attention to then? And has that changed now that you've started to really bake this and roll out this new collaboration? And you're obviously in this very cool role. Have you reprioritized metrics now based on where it was and where it is? What's the data points that you were paying attention to and that you're really paying attention to now?
I don't know. You could call me a traditionalist, but I tend to believe there are only a handful of KPIs that matter in business. And, you know, it's booked one. And then related to that, you have marketing sourced and marketing influenced pipeline, right? And then also customer success sourced pipeline. And then you have churn, NRR, and NPS. So, you know, and then there are other metrics, awareness metrics like share of voice. But these are the core metrics that really matter to the business. And I think one thing that's really important as a marketing executive is I talk with my peers on the leadership team in terms of business metrics. Like, I don't even talk that much about share of voice because that's really a marketing metric, not a business metric. NRR and churn are finance metrics. Finance is looking at those. Booked one, bookings, is also a finance metric. It's not a marketing metric. Pipeline is less of a finance metric. It is more of a go-to-market metric, but it still flies at a high enough level that, you know, our CEO takes an interest in what our pipeline looks like, right? So these are the metrics that I keep my eye on. And, and of course, I'm looking at the more detailed metrics that roll up to those as operating metrics to make sure that my business is healthy and contributing. But I'm not changing the metrics I'm most concerned about, because for me, I'm focused on those core business metrics. And I want to make sure that they remain healthy and get even healthier.
Out of those metrics, which one has been the most impacted by this collaboration and this effort?
Honestly, it's still too early to tell. These metrics take a while. And this is a funny one because it's hard to tell when something doesn't change, if you know what I mean. Like our economy we're seeing projects being delayed. It's not great for a lot of software companies out there. Just look around at some of the publicly traded companies are talking about 1% growth or even shrinking. You know, we continue to grow in double digits. We are still driving growth. My pipeline targets, I'm over 100% on pipeline. And being able to make our sales numbers, be over on pipeline, drive double digit growth, I attribute the fact that we are able to sustain that in this economy to the setup. It's the setup and it's the execution. If we weren't taking these measures to push back actively against a cooled economy, we would be seeing flagging numbers like everybody else. So it's one of those things where you say, well, nothing's really changing. You're doing all this stuff, but nothing's really changing. And my view is it's not changing for the negative because we're doing all of this stuff. And hopefully, as the economy starts to turn around and we start to see investment and growth again, we will outpace growth from our competitors who are recovering from lower growth rates, or the industry, the SaaS industry as a whole, quite frankly.
I was going to ask about that a bit later, but you brought it up as just doing more with less, right? In terms of in the executive marketing role, the like you said, the cooling economy, I think is a generous way to put it. And I'm seeing that across the board, right? Talking to marketing leaders who are, your budgets are smaller, yet they're still, of course, responsible for driving
growth. Can I jump in on something? Absolutely, for years now, 4 years, it's been do more with less, do more with less, do more with less. Mm. I actually hate that phrase because I don't want to do more with less. What I want to do is I want to do better with less. Because when, the implication of do more, and I'll give you a perspective on this. If I'm at 3x pipeline coverage, right? And now the way that I do more, in air quotes, with less is I ratchet up to 4x pipeline coverage and I start putting more opportunities into the pipeline, right? A seller cannot have 25% more conversations than they're having today. They're probably, most sellers after the last few years, most sales organizations have gotten to a pretty efficient place. They've cut out any overhead that they have, and they're down to a minimum number of feet on the street, right? And so I think this whole idea of do more with less is a little bit misleading, because I don't want to give sellers more. In fact, I want to give sellers fewer opportunities to work, but I want to give them really high quality opportunities so that they can slow down a little bit, take their time, be focused on the account and win the deal, because it's teed up really well for them. The customer's at the right phase of the buying journey, right? We're not so much worried about qualifying them as top of funnel, mid funnel, bottom funnel. What we're thinking about is, where is this human being psychologically in their buying process, right? And then only passing them off to sales when they're finally ready to be serious about evaluating software. It's marketing's job to convince them to evaluate. And then the SDR helps convince to make sure that we're on the list of companies to evaluate. And then the seller is there to help drive that evaluation to a favorable outcome. And so to me, it's really about, we have to do better with less, which means we have to be sharper about how we spend and how we think about it, as opposed to striving to do more with less. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump on that, but I think it's such an important distinction. And so I just wanted to talk about that for a minute.
That's a great social clip. I'm like, yes, that was fantastic. Doing better with less, which that might even be the title of the episode. So thank you for that one.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So when did this blend of the CXO CMO role get on your radar? Did you foresee this happening? I mean, you have a lot of experience in marketing and marketing leadership, but what was that moment in time of you okay, I see a shift, and now it's literally changing the title of the CMO?
Well, it's interesting. I've been around CRM and related stuff since the 90s. And I saw over time, this drift to go from managing the customer relationship to managing the customer experience. And I spent a lot of time talking about CX as a discipline, as a marketer. And my last job, I was a CMO, and I realized that we're really only dealing with the first half of the customer's experience. And as marketers, we are creating a brand promise and we're feeding that to sales, and sales is repeating that brand promise. And then we get to contract and then we're kind of done and we're like, okay, good luck guys. You know, implementation comes in and support comes in. And right. And so I had the opportunity to talk to the CEO here at Emburse, Eric Friedrichsen. And we started talking about this challenge of how do companies differentiate based on customer experience. And my point of view is that you have to think about the whole customer journey. And we got into this discussion of, well, how do you look after the whole customer journey when you don't have an executive who's responsible for the whole customer journey? And I said, well, that's kind of my point, is I believe that we need executives who aren't just compartmentalized into a go-to-market role or a customer success and support role, but rather having an executive who really oversees that entire end-to-end experience. And so we defined the scope of the role, and then I started looking in the market and I realized that this title is becoming more common. We start to see it. Different companies define it in different ways. But for me, it is the best way to make sure that when we make a promise, we're promising something that we can keep, because I'm also responsible for keeping the promise that we make.
I see you talk a lot about that. I've heard a couple of other things online that you've spoken about. You talk about keeping the customer promise and like making that a very real thing. So you've now married your, you know, obsession with marketing and your obsession with the customer in a really critical role. I think you've uniquely positioned yourself right at the sweet spot, because as I talk to a lot of marketing leaders, I'm seeing this role pop up. In fact, later today, we have another you know, epic person coming on the show who's very focused on CXO stuff too. So it's interesting to consider that here you are, you have a lot of experience as a marketing leader. Now you're also adding on this retention piece and being responsible for the whole customer experience, from not just, you know, top of funnel to conversion. You're now really taking on even more as a marketing leader. So that seems like, okay, there's already enough stress and pressure as being, you know, to be a CMO, right? You've got to drive growth. It's culture, it's internal and external, like building trust. And okay, now, by the way, I also want to be responsible for the customer experience at the top level and support our customers and our team. How do you manage that?
Well, a lot of people tell me I'm a glutton for punishment. How do you manage it? It's so the hack that I use to manage pretty much everything in business is I look at everything through the customer lens, because it cuts out all of the stuff that's meaningless and unhelpful. Right. If we look at our work through the lens of the customer and it take that outside in perspective, it shifts where we spend our time and where we focus. And so part of what I've done is I've used this model of campaigns, which marketing has used for ages, but I've extended it through the whole customer journey. So I've implemented a customer journey model here at Emburse, where we look at the entire journey from awareness through to advocacy. And then I'm starting to use that structure to show other teams, like the customer success team, how they participate and how we extend the experience, which is defined by the messages that people hear and the content that they read and the way they evaluate the solution and the why behind the buy. And then carry that forward, because a customer success manager, if they understand why you purchased something and all the stuff you've seen and heard up until that point, they can make sure that they're closing the loop and helping you see the value of your purchase, which then creates advocacy, which is something that feeds marketing. And so by demonstrating to these two teams and others in the organization, sales, support, implementation services, by demonstrating how these pieces fit together and create a virtuous cycle, it changes the discussion internally. And now you're breaking silos and you have teams that are collaborating because they see a common outcome, which makes my job so much easier.
Wow.
So it actually takes stress out of my life by getting people working together holistically. Now, the stress is, of course, getting that work done. But as we turn the corner, I've been here almost a year and we're turning that corner and we're starting to see the collaboration taking off. my life is becoming much, much easier. And I can really focus now on innovation and future strategy.
Wow. So you talk about extending the experience. I love this. I think that it seems to me that even as a consumer on the B2B side or the B2C side, like for me, every interaction with the brand matters now. Every time, whether I'm a customer, a prospect, you know, an old customer, like when I'm engaging with the brand, like every moment matters, right? And so I love that you this sort of extend the experience. Can you maybe give us an example, talk about what that means and what that's done in terms of like results at Emberse?
Sure. So I'm going to start where you started, which is in the consumer world, right? So if you think about drinking coffee, you know, Starbucks really revolutionized the way we think about coffee because it's no longer just about the coffee. It's really about the experience of drinking the coffee. And, you know, going through the drive-through is a very different experience than sitting in a Starbucks location, enjoying the free Wi-Fi, sitting on the sofa, listening to smooth jazz playing in the background, right? Interacting with a barista. And that's really when you think about the in-store experience, that's fundamentally created this, hey, every experience we have with a brand matters. We've shifted because coffee is commoditized, as most things are, right? We have a set of expense management solutions that we offer our customers. And while there are some unique attributes, I'll be honest, right? It's not rocket science right now. And you could probably buy one of our competitors' products and also have success with it. What really differentiates us in these commoditized spaces is the experience of doing business with us. And the good news at Emberse is that we have a longstanding record of delivering great customer experiences. Our customers have been surveyed over and over again, and they've talked about experience. The experience of doing business with us is one of the reasons why they love us and why they stay with us and they don't churn out. And so for me, it's right now, it's about how do we take that to the next level and how do we continue that as we scale as a business? Because when it's different when you've got 10,000, 20,000 customers versus 100, 200,000 customers. And that's really the key is how do we make sure that as we scale our business and we go through our next phase of growth, how do we retain that excellent customer experience?
It's fascinating. I think, and again, the ones that are going to win are going to, you know, they're going to be ahead of this, right? And they're going to, in terms of mapping the customer journey and understanding the entire process and also thinking, like you said, also where we're headed, like the scoreboard of scale and identifying these things along the way. What are some of the shifts that you made, you know, when you step into this role? You mentioned having the conversation with the CEO. You're starting to look at the business very holistically now. Can you talk about maybe some of the early wins, some of the early changes in terms of the customer experience or just in the role of CXO, some of the early things you saw, an opportunity, a gap, is like, wow, we can close this. And then what happened?
Yeah. So the first obvious one is the two teams being integrated under a single leader and actually having joint team meetings where I brought the customer success leadership in with the marketing leadership. And we started having weekly team calls as one does, right? We had our weekly CX leadership team call. And what's interesting is marketing always has this problem where marketers are too far away from the customer, right? So they're relying on third-party feedback like that of a salesperson to come back. And customer success people talk to customers all the time, existing customers, not in a net new competitive situation, but literally every day checking in, how are you doing, right? So what we discovered was that customer success people could very easily arrange conversations for a product marketer to try out new messaging on an existing customer and get feedback from them, right? So immediately we've started to change some of the business processes within marketing, which is yielding better results because we're getting real feedback from real customers instead of just sort of addressing personas. And then vice versa, the customer success team wasn't aware of all of the marketing assets that are being delivered because we don't do customer success enablement. We focus as marketers on sales enablement.
Got it.
And so now all of a sudden, CSMs are saying, wow, I don't have to recreate the wheel. There are all these things I could be sending my customer and showing value and it doesn't cost them time and effort. And so you know, immediately we started to see synergy, which is my least favorite buzzword in the world, but it's like, I don't have a better word for that other than to, you know, the result of what we've seen between these two organizations. And so there's a lot of crossover now. CSMs and marketers are talking to each other in a whole new way. That's very quickly changed the way we think about our work. Longer term results, I absolutely expect to see customer success qualified leads going up as they start leveraging more of these marketing materials. The quality of the marketing assets, we've already done a lot of message testing and we can see the lift on the website. Conversion rates are going up as we improve the language we're using and start tightening up on the message in the customer's words. So there are tons of benefits of this.
I love that you talked about like breaking up the silos, because here you got these two, you know, very potent teams on the CSM side and the marketing side. You're saying, hey, you know, you've been in that silo with all this awesome brilliance, and you've been in this silo with that brilliance. Now we're going to bring everybody together, which of course, like in theory, sounds exceptional and like, let's do it. But what was that process like? Was everybody just super excited to kind of reach across the aisle and start to build trust that way? Were people kind of like, I don't know about this. This feels like, you know, that could bring different challenges and obstacles in terms of dynamics and goals and things like that. How do you begin to break those silos and invite that? Because clearly it's working well. But yeah, tell us more of kind of your approach there.
Actually, there was no magic. I hate to disappoint you, but you know, we're really blessed with a corporate culture of leaning in and teamwork at Emburse. There's a lot of desire to collaborate. And so everybody can feel the silos. And this is, I think, a universal problem. I worked at SAP for 15 years.
Yep.
Whether you're at a big company or at a small company, you can feel the silos when they're there. And the question is always, how do we break the silos? How do we start to chip away at this? So it's not a lack of desire. It's typically a lack of institutional will or leadership to focus on breaking the silos. And so there was a moment of confusion when people sort of, I came in as this new C-level title. People are like, what the heck is that? And what does marketing and customer success have to do with each other? I was really lucky because my first day was sales kickoff. So I show up and I get on stage on day one at a new job, and I get to tell everybody why we're doing this. And I think that immediately laid the groundwork for people to understand how we were going to break these silos, why this mattered, and what the long-term view of bringing the keep the promise team and the make the promise team together under sort of one organizational umbrella. Obviously, the next phase of that, the immediate next phase, is going from building an organization that encourages people to collaborate to actually reconstructing the organization in a way that integrates people's work. So thinking about an operating model, building a target operating model where the workflows are effectively integrated, where it's not just, hey, when I want to talk to a customer about testing messaging, I'll reach out to a CSM, but literally baking, hey, message testing is part of what we do. You have to test your message with a customer before you bake it into your materials. And so you reach out to a CSM manager, and this is the workflow. So starting to really bake it into the operational processes in the org, that's what we've been working on through the course of this year. And I just did a reorganization internally to facilitate that in a more meaningful way.
Where did that come from to be able to like build this target operating model? Was that experience you're drawing from SAP? That's really interesting.
Yes. I think part of my hallmark as a leader has been somebody who was put into leadership positions to drive change. I don't love the term change agent, but I suppose that applies to me. And a lot of what I did, because if you look at my background, I started out as an engineer. I was writing code. I lived in sales for a long time in my career. I held pre-sales and sales roles. And then I was part of a product launch team where I did all kinds of stuff, from recruiting and enabling partners to product managing part of the product for the release. So I did a whole bunch of different things. And so I have a pretty diverse background. And I think that ultimately helps me look at this thing much more holistically and see how the pieces fit together.
Interesting. So when I'm thinking about a target operating model, is it just essentially this kind of blueprint that outlines how a company can like align its operations, align kind of where we're headed? It really is that just like an overall business strategy?
It's a level lower. So if you think about the blueprint is absolutely correct as a definition. It's a way of working. And so how do you build a campaign? For example, right? What are the inputs? What are the strategies that have to be considered? How does that all get baked? And which teams are involved and when? What are all the deliverables? If you think about it, it's sort of the blueprint for an assembly line, because at the end of the day, we're producing things. We're producing demand, which consists of us building a whole bunch of materials and putting them into the market over various channels. We're producing renewals by convincing customers to stay with us and renew their contract and go on to become advocates. And so if you think about it from a, you know, sort of a factory perspective, you have to figure out how do these different teams work together to produce the result, not at the corporate level, but within marketing. Right? How do you use the insights that your comms team is getting out of the marketplace and your competitive intelligence team? How do you use the persona research that product marketing is doing? Like, how do you bring all that stuff together and then put it into a workflow that allows us to create assets across the entire customer journey and put them in the right channels so that the customers see them at the appropriate moment?
Wow. And you're also doing this inside of a culture that you stepped into, right? That, you know, had existed before you. And yet you're also bringing in, like you said, you know, a good word is change agent, because you're also ultimately creating this alignment between departments, between goals. So you've got CSM, the CSM folks, the marketers meeting. And I just love that. When do the sales folks get into that conversation, right? Because I could see also value of, you know, bringing the sales folks with the CSM folks and the marketers, and how do we then, and maybe you're doing that already, but are you intentionally keeping the sales folks out of those conversations, or do you bring them in at another layer? What's that look like?
Well, sellers need to be selling, not spending a lot of time in internal meetings. But I work closely with sales leadership, right? And so part of this is, as I was saying, if you think about what we're trying to do, is we're distilling down everything we know about the market and our audience and our competitors to figure out how do we position ourselves and our product and the experiences that we're going to offer the customer as unique. And how do we get that in front of the customer, right? And the salespeople come in at a really important moment in the customer journey. And so our goal is to integrate with sales leadership to make sure that every seller knows what's coming and has the opportunity to provide feedback before it happens, and then enable those sellers on those key messages, enable them to use our resources if they're going to do some cold calling and prospect to do pipeline self-gen. Also enable them on how to carry the conversation forward to have a contiguous experience, because with each campaign, it's a different message. We're pushing on a different pain point. And what we don't want is the seller to come in and go, so, hey, what are you interested in? Right? We need to make sure that there's enablement that way. So there's a little bit of pull them in early, help get their input as we develop, but then really focus on enablement, starting with sales kickoff and then running through the course of the year, making sure they understand what's going into the market and when, what those key messages are, and then how to pick up a prospect who's coming to them. And when they pick up the conversation, that they're speaking with the same voice we were speaking with. And then ultimately, and we're working through improving our onboarding experience right now, making sure that there's a handoff between sales to the CSM, who will then effectively remain with the account going forward, versus having the salesperson hand it off to an implementation leader, a project lead, who will then later bring customer success in, right? So it's really about looking at how do we bring these teams together at the right moments in the journey, because we can't bring them together all of the time in every meeting when we're architecting these things, because then we're taking people who talk to customers away from their core job of talking to customers, if that makes sense.
So let's go back to the double digit growth. This is amazing, because we're seeing a lot of companies that are not doing that, certainly Is it a testament to eliminating kind of waste and doubling down on other things, or, you know, are there acquisitions happening? Like, what would you attribute to that double digit growth in a world that's not all experiencing that, certainly in your segment?
Execution. I mean, we did make an acquisition, but that acquisition hasn't been fully integrated yet. So
we're
running them independently right now. 24 will be the year of integration for that. But in general, it's just down to execution and a focus on doing better with less, right? Making sure that we are continuing, despite shrinking budgets, to invest in the tactics that make the most sense. Making sure that we are, from a revenue perspective, making sure that we're keeping our churn numbers low so that we have the operating headroom to be able to continue investment in marketing and in sales. It's about making sure we have operational excellence in sales. I think that's the symbiotic relationship between marketing and sales, and why you often see conflict between CROs and CMOs is, you know, the CMO is saying, hey, I've got plenty of pipeline, your sellers aren't acting on it. And the CRO is saying, all of your pipeline is garbage. It's not, you know, my sellers can't do anything with it, right? And my CRO and I work together incredibly well, and we're very aligned about what represents quality and what represents accountability. And we have a, you know, part of my role on our executive leadership team is to represent the entire pipeline to our board. So I have to talk about the whole shoot and match, as opposed to just marketing's contribution. And that's something that I relish, because from my perspective, it actually matters a lot less who generates the pipeline. Like, I'm not interested in the conversation about getting credit for pipeline. I'm most interested, first and foremost interested in, do we have enough clean, healthy, and sufficient pipeline to get to the number, right? And if I have to support another team who's going to get the credit, that's great. I don't have a problem with that. Now, I do care about crediting the tactics back. I need to make sure I have good attribution, because what I don't want to do is kill off a tactic that is actually producing well, but on paper doesn't look like it. That's where the attribution really matters. But I don't look at this as a, hey, I want to get credit, give credit where credit is due. It's more along the lines of, let's work together as a team. SDRs, marketing, CSMs, partnerships. Let's work together as a team and constantly be looking at the pipeline to make sure that there's enough coverage. And then if there is not enough coverage, let's figure out what's the best way to fill that gap. If it's future quarters, marketing can help with that. If it's current quarter, we'll get the SDRs on the phone, right? Like, figuring it out holistically is where we need to start. And then certainly working internally within each of these organizations to hold ourselves accountable to deliver. And when a tactic or a campaign's not delivering, digging in and asking why.
The collaboration piece about you and the CRO coming together and getting really clear, you said, on quality and accountability, it seems like there would be, do you share the same goal, like, ultimately, or is there a distinction between, like, your goal and the CRO's goal?
Well, everybody at the executive leadership team level shares revenue and bookings goals, right?
Got
like
it.
We're all tied to corporate performance. So, you know, this is the part that I never really, I've been talking to CMOs and CROs for years in my prior marketing roles when I was marketing CX solutions. You know, we sold both to the office of the CRO and the office of the CMO. And, you know, I never really understood why there was so much conflict. You know, obviously at a human level, it's obvious why there's conflict, right? But I never really understood at the corporate level why there would be so much conflict, because at the end of the day, we have the same goals. We're completely aligned, right? We're looking for corporate performance, and we need to generate bookings. And so as a CMO, I've always been concerned about not just how much pipeline do we have, but really, how much is marketing contributing to the closed won business? And if we have a different proportion of deals that are being closed in terms of source, right? If marketing is responsible for a 40%, 50%, 60%, pick your number, it's different in every company, right?
But right.
whatever percentage of contribution, if the closed one doesn't mirror that, then you need to go ask why, right? Is it because salespeople don't like the leads that they're getting and they're just generating their own, right? Dig into that, because ultimately, if you demonstrate that you're more concerned about booked one than even pipeline, now you're aligned with your CRO.
Wow. So are you interacting much with the sales folks? Like, are you spending a lot of time with the sales teams?
All the time. Yeah. Okay. I talk to the CRO. We have standing one-on-ones. We talk every week. Okay. I also have meetings with sales leaders. I've told them my door's open. So some of them call me more regularly than others. But
okay.
I talk to the SVPs. I talk to the VPs. I make it my business to drive alignment and just do check-ins periodically. Whenever I have the opportunity to go to an event, I always seek out the salespeople in the room and I go talk to them directly. And I think that goes a long way, again, to demonstrate that it's not just messaging, that it's actual commitment to supporting that team. And I think that may be born out of the fact that I was in sales for so long. And I've had to carry the bag. I had to build the territory. I had to cold call my way to build a pipeline. So I've been there and I know how hard that is. And that's really, at the end of the day, I think what marketing is there to do is help drive the conversations for sales to pick up.
And also, you're driving these conversations, you're building trust with the executives, certainly, and the teams that are all supporting this business. And you're also in a space, not just your industry, but I mean, you know how fast this world is moving. You've got AI, tools and technology and happening all the time, where it's like the velocity at which I think a CXO or a C-level exec can be more successful, but just like more impactful given the nature of innovation, the future of where we're headed. Talk about the future of this role and what this looks like moving forward. And if you can touch on like, what's in your toolbox for the CEO? What are some of the like table stakes to be successful as a CXO?
That's a multi-part question. I'm going to try to do my best. The future, I think, look, the hard part is instrumenting the customer journey. And maybe this is a little bit of the blending of the two, but companies are not set up. First of all, companies are not set up around a customer journey mindset. They just aren't, right? And I think the hardest challenge that I face is getting everybody in the organization thinking about their direct impact on the customer journey. Right? Because it's really easy for salespeople and customer success people to know, right, what their impact is because they talk to customers all the time. But if you work in accounting, if you work in human resources, it's a little bit harder, right, to feel like, what is my connection to the customer? But ultimately, if you can get everybody aligned around it, if you can integrate the idea of the customer journey into the DNA of your company, then everything, like I was saying earlier, everything becomes easier, right? My job will become infinitely easier once I am at a place where every employee at Emburse, not just like off the top of their head, but like deep in their heart, knows how their work affects the customer and comes to work with that mindset. Right. And that elevates us out of all of the conflict that happens in every business where we have silos and we have issues and people don't understand why. And you hear the not my job pop up, right?
Like
those conflicts are natural and normal and they're everywhere. But I think it's because we're framing things from our own point of view as opposed to adopting the customer point of view. And so that's what's ahead for me, is really driving a cultural shift within the business to start broadening the effect well beyond the go-to-market and customer success and support roles in the business and getting people really carefully thinking about their contributions to that customer journey and framing that up. In terms of the toolbox, we have to better instrument the customer journey so that we're running our business proactively on the journey instead of reactively reporting out on it. And again, I think most companies struggle with the same set of challenges. We have too many products in the stack, none of which are fully adopted. But what I want to look at is, you know, in marketing, we have intent signals, right? We have tools that give us intent signaling. And you can start to look at use cases beyond the marketing use case for intent signaling. So the example would be, if you have a customer where you have a health score that's declining for the customer health, if you go look at the intent signals, you can see if they're actually out shopping for a competitor. And so you can be much more fine-grained in your response to that customer if you start applying more heuristics. And again, these are typically siloed solutions. Intent signaling is something that marketing uses pretty exclusively. I don't even think sales typically dives into that part of it, right? So taking the tools we have in the toolbox and parsing out what is actually useful, driving adoption of the tools that move the needle, simplifying the tech stack, and then thinking about how do we apply those tools, not just to where they've always been used, but start applying those tools across the customer journey, and the recognition that an intent signal during a non-buying phase could actually be a precursor to churn. So we can head churn off at the pass and prioritize CSM time in a new way based on some new data and insights. So that's how I think about the toolbox, is I need fewer tools in the box, but I need to really know how to use every single one of those tools and get the most out of the investment. And that's, you know, back to my mantra of doing better with less. That's how you do better with less. Too many tools creates too much confusion. And then you have to feed it. You have to keep all the integrations alive, and you wind up doing more harm than good, quite frankly.
Where does AI kind of fit into your, you know, either day-to-day, or is it, do you leverage AI in any way for your role as CXO?
I don't use AI from a strategy or planning perspective. I use, you know, AI is another tool in the arsenal. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking a lot about the way that AI helps us to create more harmony and, you know, things like tone, right? Like you can teach an AI what your tone is, and you can have it proofread everything for you, right? So now I can free up an editor's time. There's a lot of cost avoidance strategy in using AI. I think AI is still a little bit of a blunt instrument. It's rapidly improving, but it's still a bit of a blunt instrument in terms of garbage in, garbage out. But even in the way that we analyze data and summarize, right? You can take one of the beautiful use cases for sales and customer success is you take an existing customer's entire incident history and you feed it to an AI and it'll summarize it for you. It'll tell you what's important to them and where their issues have been. And so the synthesis activity of an AI, I think, is for me one of the most interesting aspects right now, is to be able to summarize, because nobody has time to read through all this, least of all salespeople, right? Like they're so busy, yep. Right? They just want it handed to them. And so being able to have the synthesis happen automatically and feed that to them, I think those are some of the things that I'm excited about with AI.
Super interesting, especially on the synthesizing part. I mean, the speed that I can take a large data set and then summarize that, extract useful insights from that in a myriad of ways, to me, it's just been very fun to play with at lots of different levels. You talked about, you know, getting everyone in the business to kind of like understand their impact on the customer journey, right? Maybe a little easier to do with marketing and certainly, you know, CSM, but like you said, there's accounting, there's HR, there's, you know, other operational folks, designers, developers, et cetera. How do you know that you're achieving that goal of getting everybody to really, you know, essentially get out of the silo, breaking down those, being more cross-functional, you know, aligning incentives, all the really interesting things that you're doing, but how do you know it's working?
Honestly, it's the hallway conversations, which, you know, it's hard to have in a virtual world. But when you hear people saying, oh, I was talking to, and they name a counterpart in a different department about the customer journey, or, hey, we were thinking about this phase of the customer experience, what, you know, we were talking about how we would tackle that, right? And so, you know, for example, thinking about implementation service design, right? What is the experience of having the product be implemented, that kind of a conversation, now we're getting people who are thinking mostly about billable hours and resource management and all that kind of stuff. They're starting to shift their mindset. And so for me, it's this, you know, concentric circles out. You start with the teams that are focused on, you know, who speak directly to the customer. And then you go to the next ring out where it's the indirect, but still customer focused activity. And over time, the conversation shifts. And then, you know, that's the leading indicator. When you hear people, for me, not long after I had brought these two teams, marketing and customer success together, I was having a conversation with somebody who was further down in the management chain. And she said, "Oh yeah, last week I was talking with this CSM manager and like told me about the conversation." And I was like, "Okay, check. They're talking. That has to start. That's a leading indicator that we're going to have success, is if new people are talking about topics that they've never spoken about before. That's the first step. And then the KPIs will lag, but I have a lot of confidence that they will follow."
Wow. Fascinating. Johan, I knew this was going to happen, and we have a couple of minutes left. I'm like, man, I feel like there's so many, this is so interesting because, like, again, like I view you as, you know, as someone who is really innovating in the role of CMO, right? A role that's, you know, of course I've spent the last, you know, 3+ years, you know, really looking at this role and watching the evolution and talking to lots of different people. And here you are really, you know, being an advocate for what this role can mean for an organization and the teams both inside and out that, you know, that are supporting. Amazing. I just have a final kind of mic drop moment for you. And I want you to just think about, you know, your fellow C-level executives, right? Because you have this experience in both creative and business aspects of marketing, clearly. How do you balance the need for innovation and creativity with, of course, these pragmatic requirements of like achieving these business objectives? What guidance can you offer fellow executives that are really seeking to balance in their own organizations, or who are already going down this path or seeing what you're doing and they're like, yes, we're doing the same thing? What can you leave behind for them?
The best advice I can give is the same advice I get asked when I'm asked about work-life balance, which is it's not about balance, it's about integration, right? It's not about trying to balance creativity and innovation with cost savings or other measures. It's really about trying to integrate those two things, to take a step back. And I think, you know, fundamentally, and this is, it's funny because our corporate strategy is to disrupt our own industry by taking a step back and thinking about expense management in an entirely new way. And that mirrors very much what I'm trying to do internally by taking a step back and saying, look, we have these functions. We've had these functions for quite some time as a business. What if we looked at them in a new way? How would we find efficiency and yet still make huge gains in terms of creativity, in terms of professional growth for everyone in the organization, right? Because when you fundamentally re-architect the way you think about your business, you create huge opportunity for everybody involved without adding lots of headcount and trying to create new positions, right? Because you're changing the way people think about their work, which gives rise to the need to learn new skill sets, which gives rise to the need to reorganize and restructure the talent that you have on the team. And so that's my big piece of advice here is take a minute, step back. For the CMOs who are listening, you're the maker of the brand promise. And ultimately, the company is looking to you to define what that promise is, get it out there, put it on the website, and get recordings of customers that are saying that you've kept that brand promise. The gap is that today, what are you doing to influence the way the promise is being kept?
Amazing. And I hope you're working on a book, Johan, because if you don't write a book on this stuff, I'm going to be disappointed. And this is incredible. I very grateful. I know I speak on behalf of our team. This has been exceptional. I feel like I've been sitting kind of in front of a panel of one, learning so much about you know, what it means to be a CXO in as we wrap up the year and really set off for a bang up 2024. Thank you so much for being a part of our show and our audience, and we really appreciate you. Have an awesome, awesome rest of your day.
Oh, thanks so much. It's been super fun for me too.
You have 8 seconds to capture the attention of your audience. 8 seconds to make a connection or risk a click away, a swipe, or a scroll to the next topic. This difference lies in your ability to deliver relevant experience to your audience across devices and across channels. But delivering on a really great experience is impossible without the right people and the right technology. You've got the right people, but your technology choices make or break someone's experience with your brand. I talk to CMOs all the time within the Fortune 1000, and I know how important this is at the center of gravity for your entire digital experience. Brightspot Content Management System can deliver relevant content, personalized experiences, and cross-channel synergies to create unforgettable brand experiences so you can be a bright spot in someone's day. From global crisis to hunger relief efforts to natural disaster preparation, the messages you deliver save lives. They also inform important decision-making and help keep communities safe and sound. The speed and scale of your content needs to be delivered faster and more precise and on a much larger scale than ever before. Brightspot Content Management System is already supporting some of the world's largest organizations to communicate on a global scale. From Johnson & Johnson sharing breaking news stories about its COVID-19 vaccine to helping Whole Foods tell their brand story to audiences around the world. Brightspot is designed to handle rapid iteration and personalized messages to those you really care about most. Learn more at brightspot.com/marketing trends.